Blog Talk Radio.
All right, back on the old platform again. And it seems like the best way to do it. We got a good recording last week, so that's how I'm going
to
do it.
I used to hate when you disconnect us, and you'd be like, we cannot connect you this time. Goodbye.
It's like a Siri version, the lady that connects us to the show. Anyway, talk about connections. I didn't see any real big highlights or anything. All I heard was that Francis Ngannou managed to knock Tyson Fury down in his very first professional boxing fight, which is a shock to begin with.
I saw the knockdown, and we'll go into it more in a minute, what my thought process was.
Yeah, I saw the whole thing live and had to broadcast it. A lot of my friends that were too cheap to get it or couldn't figure out how to get it.
Right.
And I scored it round for round, so I'll be interested in your critique on that.
Yeah, there's no better way to welcome Francis Ngannou into the wild world of boxing than giving him a controversial split decision to think about for a while. But already, I mean, he exceeded expectations just by making it through the fight.
Yeah, really.
But, and he is, you know, obviously a decent striker. So the question you have to ask is this a fluke? Is Tyson Fury just being lazy again like he has a tendency to do and he didn't prepare enough for this fight? Or is Ngannou really that good and just needs a little bit of fine-tuning to be competitive amongst all the top heavyweights right now?
Well, I'm going to support this mostly over time because, like I said, I was running around all weekend last weekend, so I didn't have to, especially from the afternoon, I didn't have a chance to sit down and order a fight. I had so much going on. So I was actually out last Saturday night, and I was like, oh, shit, the fight's over by now. Let me just look at my phone. And it was like, Fury wins, split decision, knockdown in the process. I was like, did I just read that right? I didn't want to split the decision. So I was like, okay. I said, maybe that shot of Crown Royal and Jameson that I just had, maybe is affecting my reading, my comprehension. So then I looked again the next day, and I'm like, huh. And then I started looking and seeing what everybody's saying on social media, because I have contacts on there that are boxing guys like Iceman John Scully, guys that I actually boxed with.
Scully says he won't watch the fight.
These are strictly boxing guys.
I call them that MMA guy.
But then I also have guys that are MMA fans and guys that are a hybrid of both. I was reading them all. And a lot of people said, I think Ngannou got robbed.
Yeah.
Other people said, I think Fury robbed everybody by coming in less than optimal condition.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm leaning towards right now. The knockdown punch, I did see it on replay. It was almost like a cupping left hook to the head. It might not look overly devastating. It did catch him high on the head, high on the temple. But it more looked like a cupping punch. It did not look like a solid striking with the box of the fist punch. Now, obviously, you're dealing with a big, physical, strong guy, and even a cupping punch can cause damage if landing in.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've seen Fury's expression on the floor. It's like, whoa. His eyes kind of got big. It's juice.
Hey, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Well, I see it more than anything as the small town roots that in Africa where Ngannou's from. Like, he came from absolutely nothing. And, like, he knows, I think, in his head and his heart that he only has, like, a few years to do this. And so getting Mike Tyson in his corner and taking it seriously, I could totally see how he could completely reinvent himself with just that self-belief and that work. Like, he used to friggin' shovel dirt all day in mines down there in Africa. So, just incredible background and you know, that hunger is always there, it seems like, in him. And he really didn't have that many fights before he got the UFC title opportunity.
And Rich, you make a great point on that. When you get a lot of these guys that have come from such nothing, Marvin Hagler had a great quote from, you know, when he was champion. He goes, it's hard to get up and run at 5 a.m. in the cold when you're sleeping in some pajamas. You know, a lot of these guys that have come from nothing, one guy I remember in particular that had a very good career until it got derailed was Edison Miranda. And I remember watching one of his fights. I think it was the one where he beat a guy from my gym, Willie Gibbs. And one of my friends was watching that fight as well, and he texted me that night. He goes, it's going to be hard to beat a guy that grew up eating roadkill. Yeah.
There was a boxer years ago. I remember being on like a conference call and they were talking about him. Like, he literally came directly out of the jungle. He was living in the jungle by himself. His parents abandoned him or something like that. And they were talking about his life story. And I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, how would you want to be fighting that guy? Coming straight out of the jungle, literally. I think his nickname is the Animal, but that's the kind of story that sounds like. Anyway, not sure there was anything big on the undercard last weekend. I'm trying to see.
Yeah, just a bunch of knockouts.
Oh, knockouts.
Yeah, none of the fight, and which it made the pageantry go on even longer.
Yeah.
Because they had some. And I can't think of it. It's a long name. On the second fight on the main card, a big Russian, and he's 34, and he's living in Canada now. Kind of can't think of the name, but he's got a lot of knockouts, but he's kind of at the stage he's got to step it up. But, yeah, there were, I think, three first-round knockouts and then another mid-fight knockout.
Fabio Wardley and David Adelay, heavyweights. Is it all heavyweights?
Yes. And that was the co-main event. Yeah, go back two fights before that.
Joseph Parker, 32-3, and Simon Keane, 23-1.
No, okay. Back before that.
That was Carlos Takam, got TKO'd by Martin Bacoli. Bacoli.
Right before that.
Those are the only ones they're giving me, because I did two stars and above.
Okay.
But, yeah, those were the three big heavyweight fights. They all ended up by TKO or KO. It was the third round. Parker KO'd Keane in the third round.
Well, I'll tell you, some of the pictures I've seen from the group photos, just unbelievable. Larry Holmes was there. You know, they brought luminaries from both sports like I've never seen.
That's the sports washing, Tom. Don't fall for it. Exactly what that is. You know, think about it. The UFC just did an event in Abu Dhabi, big Arabian country. This is in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And that's supposedly where the drug kingpin is hanging out, that the Fury brothers are doing business with on the side. And there's a lot of money pouring through that area. I mean, these people have more money than most people should be allowed to have. And they love sports. They've fallen in love with sports, and they're going to spend all their money promoting sports. Remember how seriously some of these Arab countries can take sports. All you have to do is think back to when Saddam Hussein's son executed the soccer teams. For not winning the game. So, yeah. I don't know. It's going to be rough.
As far as the fight goes, though, you know, like what you're saying, I think it's a combination of both. Because Nagano was just like an instinctive fighter. So
yeah.
I think he was better than expected, and maybe Fury didn't train as much. But, you know, I give a lot of credit to Francis. I mean, I had Fury starting off good, you know, in the first round. It was a bunch of nothing, but I think Tyson did enough to win it. Second round, Nagano landed a little more, and I gave it to him. Third round, anyone doesn't call that 10-8, they're nuts. But then Fury got back into his rhythm, you know, moving around rounds four, five, and six. I thought Fury was on cruise control. That's not that Nagano wasn't landing anything, but Fury was just a little more effective, I thought. Round seven was close, but I had to give it to Nagano. Round eight, Nagano really landed, had Fury hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
On my card, and I couldn't believe I was seeing these numbers. After eight rounds, I had Nagano up a point.
Yeah.
In the tenth round, if you watch the films, Nagano just did not push the issue like he could have, and Tyson Fury, in my opinion, did more to win those two rounds. So I had it 95-94, and the scores were all over with some people.
Well, apparently there's one...
Two judges had it 95-94, but...
There's
know,
at least one statistician out there that claims that the punch stat numbers prove that Tyson Fury did enough to win and vindicate the decision. But I don't know. I didn't watch the fight.
Well,
I saw. I did
well,
see
and then
a couple
then,
clips.
Remember the old adage: to beat the champ,
you
have
to
beat
the
champ.
Yeah.
You have to take it. I know it wasn't a title fight, but it may as well have been. You are fighting the world heavyweight champion, the linear heavyweight champion.
But,
so,
I
well,
mean,
if, any close decision,
if anything, no. Ngannou definitely got in the conversation that he needed to get in. He's all over alerts and everything. He made news that night. He continues to make news. He's going to get challenges. He's going to get opportunities that he can win. And I think that later rounds thing is just a matter of the transition. Like some MMA fighters just cannot make that transition to boxing. They just can't do it. It's just something about, you know, standing on your feet for that amount of time, having no option to go to the ground, you can't grapple. Like, it must frustrate the hell out of them if they start that way and then they transition. But guys,
it didn't frustrate Francis at all. He had his mouth open probably by the fourth round, but he didn't really seem to completely gas like was predicted, like I thought. I thought if he comes out for the second half of the fight, because I seen how gassed he was in the first Stipe fight.
Yeah.
But he didn't, you know, he was measured. He didn't leap in like a lot of new guys, a lot of amateurs, you know, they reach with their punches, they kind of just lunge.
Right.
He wasn't doing that. He really worked on his footwork, believe it or not. So, I think there's some good fights coming with anyone, really. I mean, Deontay Wilder.
Yeah.
Because the thing about Nagano, he has concrete in his chin. Concrete. So if Wilder lands a good shot, how will that go? It'd be fun to watch. And how about AJ? Maybe he'll come back.
We
so
know.
That's a good one. I'd like to see Andrew Ruiz fight him.
I would definitely watch that. I don't know if Andy Ruiz wants that smoke.
I wouldn't think so, but hey, if you're a heavyweight contender.
Mike Tyson,
offer,
though,
right?
I think is a better trainer than even he realizes. Because I watched a clip of him coaching Evander Holyfield's son in an amateur fight. And it's not even his kid. And he's, like, giving him all the right confidence points. Like, you know, you did this good, you did that good, you know. And he was giving him advice, screaming out advice from the audience at this amateur event. And like, you know, who's going to tell Mike Tyson to shut up? So, it was awesome. And then he gave him a pep talk after the fight. And so... Having that guy in training every day, it had to have made the difference in him competing and doing well. Whether he won or lost, I don't know. I can't really say anything until I fully watch the tape, which I probably will, just to figure out what everybody's been talking about. But what strikes me the most about this is that he left the UFC on a principal point that he wanted to box. And the UFC didn't give him an opportunity. After the UFC also, I mean, it's on record. It was in all the news stories. Zuffa Boxing. Where the fuck did Zuffa Boxing go? Like, in the wind, gone, like dust. Never materialized, but they made shirts and everything, like it was going to happen. I probably still sell the shirts, and it never happened. They put all these ideas in their heads that this was going to be just like what they allow at Bellator, which is what a lot of fighters went over there for, because there was a understanding with Bellator that, hey, if you want to go do boxing, you can go take a boxing match. If you want to do whatever competition professionally you want to do, go do it. It's not going to violate your contract. But with the UFC, it's like you're tied to them for life, which is why this whole antitrust thing is going on. But Francis Ngannou was the first real fighter at that level to say, no, I'm not signing a new contract. I'm glad to get out of this one. And then make that crossover on his own and do it on his own. I mean, it brings back a lot of memories of the whole MMA versus boxing debate that we did when we first started all this. Especially because it seemed like none of the MMA fighters had a chance back then to compete in boxing at all. And we also have the story of Jake Paul now, kind of fading into the background. It's no big deal. It's more of a big deal to all of us because of that history of MMA fighters doing so poorly, that this one did so well against a world champion. An exhibition, yeah, but it was very serious. It was for more than bragging rights. So I think what it's going to do is it's going to accomplish what Francis Ngannou wanted to do for all UFC fighters, is set the tone. That what the fighter wants should be taken care of more than what makes you money. You know, what makes sure the fighter is taken care of for life financially, no matter what happens to him. Like, that should be chief in their minds. Like, he was very serious about some of the points of the contract that are not friendly to fighters. So what he did is also going to get guys like Sean O'Malley to be screaming for their own boxing match that the UFC will sanction, because they did it with Conor McGregor. Now Francis Ngannou took a step over Conor McGregor, because Conor McGregor was never seen to have gotten robbed when he went against Floyd Mayweather, you know. Nobody would ever say that that was a robbery.
No. So. You know, Tony, I was thinking of Conor when you mentioned Marvin Hagler's quote. Because prior to making that crossover and making that money, Conor was a killer.
Yeah.
And, yeah, after that, it's been, like, two different. I mean, I don't think his career is over, but I think his championship days are over. But look at all the stuff that he did, you know, bought a whiskey brand, you know, and didn't come back for quite some time, and then came back and just wasn't the same.
Yeah.
So we'll see with Fury. I mean, this is fascinating. If he's going to honor the contract to fight in December, Usyk wants that. He said, hey, you signed it. So yeah. And I watched an interview with Fury, and he just said, hey, that's not up to me. They'll sort it out. More go when I'm supposed to go. So here we go. Going to be interesting.
Well, hey, it's a wake-up call, if anything, for him to get your ass back in the gym. You got some shit to work on.
You should have seen Usyk's expression between rounds. They kept flashing.
Oh, man. I can't even imagine.
He was a bit concerned, you know. The money was... You know, you're starting to see the money in jeopardy, put it that way. They were knocking on the door.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of back when Bernard Hopkins was going to get ready to fight Oscar De La Hoya, and they both had fights within a few weeks of each other in the late spring, early summer, and Hopkins won his fight, and then De La Hoya was fighting Felix Sturm, and Sturm was boxing his ears off.
I remember that.
They went in and they showed him. And they showed Hopkins sitting there looking, and then you see him turn and he starts praying. He looks at the camera and he holds his hands and he starts like looking up at the guy and starts praying.
Not a good look. That's funny. Also, last Friday, we had our former guest, Amanda Serrano, win another fight, unanimous decision over Danila Ramos for all four world featherweight titles, IBF, IBO, WBA, and WBO. Antonio Vargas getting a unanimous decision win on the undercard, 17-1, the record now. And Hernan Marquez was his opponent, 47 wins, 10 losses, 2 draws. Not much else went on over the weekend, Saturday, but we got some stuff coming up tomorrow night, nothing big. And I want to say Colombia, Cartago. Yocasta Valley, 29-2, fighting Annabelle Ortiz, 33-5, at minimum weight. 10 rounder, 2-minute rounds with IBF world minimum weight and WBO world minimum weight, female titles, obviously. Two minute rounds. And then we got, this is kind of our mismatch of the week. You know, it's supposed to be a 2-star fight. Santiago Dominguez, 25-0 against Norberto Casco, who's 7-1 with 1 draw at welterweight. Yikes, it's a discrepancy. We get into Saturday. There's one from some Russian country, I believe. Or not Poland. Michael Cieslak, 24-2 at cruiserweight, fighting Tommy McCarthy, 20-4. I'm guessing he's not from Poland. Let me get into Tuesday before there's anything other else that's big. Oh, here's our somebody that was good to go fight. It's out in Lake Tahoe Saturday. Raymond Muratala, 18-0, fighting Diego Torres Nunes, who is 18-0 at lightweight. One of them is ranked number 6, and one of them is ranked number 95 for some reason, so it must be a discrepancy in the quality of opposition. Muratala has got the low number, number 6. Nunes, number 95. Then we got another somebody's else got to go. Henry LeBron. Not LeBron James. Henry LeBron. He is number 23 in the world, fighting William Foster III. Is 16-0. So we got 3 18-0s and 1 16-0 in these two fights. That's a super featherweight fight. The other one's at lightweight. And then we got some one at heavyweight. Efe Ajagba, the guy that made his opponent walk out the ring. 18-1 fighting Joseph Goodall, who is 10-1-1 at heavyweight. On that card. Lake Tahoe, of all places. That's a decent fight card. Probably not televised either. That's about it. That's like the most exciting fight card of the weekend. Some undefeated records are going to fall. Unless there's some draws. That when I'm betting on soccer and there's draws. Anyway, so we got a big UFC fight coming up this weekend. They've had a week off, and Derek Lewis is already in the news for all the wrong reasons. This entire week I've been reading about how he got busted for driving his Ferrari erratically. Not under the influence or anything, just, you know, torquing it on the road. Driving like a
nut. When did this happen?
Oh, just within the last week, it's been blowing up the airwaves.
So, is he on this card?
Yeah, he's on the card and everything. It's like, not like a felony level thing, so, you know, reckless driving, basically. So he's going to have to go to court and all that shit, but it won't interfere with his travel or anything like that. This is in Brazil. But he's fighting a pretty big deal guy from Brazil, Gilton Almeida. He's been storming up the ranks. And this is a main event fight, so it's going to prove whether the last shocking win was a fluke or it was genuine. But he came out with one of the most vicious attacks I've seen him execute in a very long time against Marcos Rogério de Lima in his last outing, July. It was a flying knee came at him with, and then the punches came after. But it was 33 seconds into the first. After three straight losses, I hadn't given him any hope. I didn't think he was going to do it, but just a big, oh man, that was nuts moment. And it's going to be a whole different story going up against a Brazilian in Brazil. I don't know. It's a very hostile territory situation. I don't know if that's going to bring the best out of him or make him almost shit his pants, as he's talked about after fights before. He's talked about shitting his pants. That's funny. But anyway, Gilton Almeida, 19-2. Derek Lewis, 27-11. Lewis did lose those three fights in a row. But I think he talked about how he was doing things differently after that last win. And if anything, he's going to give this guy a fight. And some other folks have given him a fight in history. He's been with the UFC Almeida since 2021. Dana White's Contender Series, September 2021. So that wouldn't have been a guy, that top-level UFC guy. But then he started right with the company. He got his first fight in February 5th of 2022 against Danilo Marquez. I didn't really heard much about him. But that was a first-round knockout. And he did not stop submitting and knocking. first, it was Marquez and Parker Porter, rear naked choke, first round. Anton Turkalj, first round for a naked choke. Shamil Abdurakhimov, pretty tough dude, got TKO'd by punches in the second round. And then his last fight in May, Jerzino Rozenstruik by rear naked choke. And Rozenstruik is kind of like a stunt double for Derek Lewis. They're very similar builds and like sometimes strategy. Rozenstruik has got like his highlight reel has to be led with his like, what was it, like a last second of a 5-round fight or something, or main event. He knocked the guy out. Unreal. But he beat Rozenstruik by rear naked choke, which is understandable given his style. But Derek Lewis, I think, is more of a seasoned veteran than Almeida, so I kind of lean towards him continuing that turnaround. I keep thinking he's reinvented himself, and even in this guy's territory, he can go in there and get it done. Just because he has like faced a guy before that was supposed to like wipe the mat with him, and I think he's channeled something. So he's probably the underdog in this one, especially considering he's in Brazil. But I'm going to say that he's probably going to knock this dude out. He's not going to let himself get submitted. But you never know. You never know. It could go either way. Almeida is probably, looks like he's submission heavy in his last few wins. So he's probably thinking grapple him
really
up
slick.
And choke him out early. So that's going to be his best bet. But while doing so, I think he's going to get clocked. I think Derek Lewis is faster than a lot of people realize. So I'm going to say it's going to end probably first, second round. Because that's when Jailton's fights end too. So I don't think it's going to go past two. And I think either way, I give Almeida a serious chance. But I just think Lewis, with his experience level, is going to give him a little growing pains lesson. He's beat some other dudes before, but you haven't beat a guy like me. But submit the rear naked choke is what he does. So I don't know if there's a particular bet where you can bet the exact submission, but that would be one to go for. First round rear naked choke. He loves those. Since he's been in the UFC, that's what he's won with, like 80% of the time. He has 2 TKOs and 3 rear naked choke wins first round in the UFC. So I would imagine Derek Lewis's people are training him to avoid rear naked chokes. If they can do the analysis that I can do. So Almeida's just a tough, tall, stocky dude. He can definitely do some damage. He can win by TKO or submission, but we have 3 out of the last 5 submissions. So Derek Lewis, if he's trained to avoid those and can keep it on the feet, I give him the striker's chance to win it under 3 rounds. All right, Gabriel Bonfim, 15-0 against Nicholas Dalby is the co-main event. I know Bonfim is undefeated, obviously, so you got to kind of give an edge to that guy, but Dalby's a pretty tough dude, too. What do you think about the main event, Tom?
I like the home court advantage.
Yeah.
So we will...
Well, I'll definitely be betting both sides of that one. Heavy first round TKO or submission. you usually have to pick one or the other, but you know, he's two separate ones. Derek Lewis, though, I think of the fights where he just somehow came back. Nobody thought he was going to do anything special, and then he came back and won them. You know, plenty of times.
And then the other way around. The other way around. When I really think he's going to shine, things just...
He farts out, yeah.
No.
Yeah. So, we'll see. I don't know. I think he's kind of reinvented himself. I think he's ready to try to make one last run for a title situation. And, you know, there's nothing badder than going into the other dude's territory and beating him there. Would the fans be happy? Probably not. But you know, I've seen it happen before where the hometown guy doesn't win. So I know they're connected to WWE, but every fight can't be fixed. I think Almeida has the shot of winning, but I don't know. I just got a feeling. I got a feeling Lewis is going to pull it off. It feels like every time I said, you know, oh, no, he's not going to do it. He's done it. we'll see. But like I said, he does have that three fight losing streak in his rearview mirror. Not too far away. I just think Almeida is kind of fresh to that high-level UFC competition. Like, he hasn't fought a knockout artist like Derek Lewis yet. He's knocked out guys that really aren't known for the power of their striking. They might be known for being good strikers and tactician guys, but not really the level of Lewis with the guys he's fought. That's why I say I think he's got a real good shot at the first round knockout, and either first round knockout for Jailton or submission for Jailton. I would bet all 3 of those at some level. Hedge it. Anyway. It is going to be an exciting main event. I don't know about the rest of the card. I haven't really gone through it. But Gabriel Bonfim being undefeated. That's good. Co-main event. Nicholas Dalby has had some really crazy wars in the octagon. Rodrigo Nascimento in the 11th fight of the night. He's 10-1 at heavyweight, fighting Dante Mays, who's 10-5. And that one will be interesting. It's not really a huge spread of heavyweights in the UFC, so we'll have to see how that one goes. Kai Barajo, 14-1 at middleweight, fighting Abusupian Magomedov, 25-5-1. Both guys, I think, are known for a lot of grappling, so guess this one's a to go the distance bet. I would say a lot of experience between the two of them. Middleweight, Rodolfo Vieira, 9-2, fighting Armin Petrosian, who's 9-2. Petrosian reminds me of the actor that played in the Star Wars movie there. Anyway, he's Rodolfo Vieira. It's, you know, it's an identical record, but Petrosian, he's kind of got like, a drunken master style, I want to say. He's not very good with defense, and he's got a big nose, so he like always gets the bloody nose, and he just goes in there and he throws straight punches. He reminds me a lot of like Forrest Griffin type fighter. And Rodolfo Vieira, I think, is a little bit more tactical, so it's going to be an interesting fight. That's a pick'em. I mean, it could go either way. The record's identical, so I want to say that's probably going to go the distance. Petrosian is on a knockout artist. I don't think Vieira is a finishing guy at middleweight. Vince Pichel, 14-3, fighting Ismael Bonfim, 19-4, lightweight. That'll be a good scrap. And our Elvis fight of the week, spelled E-L-V-E-S, Elvis Brenner, 15-3, is fighting at catchweight, 165 pounds. About this guy's name, Kyman Krushevsky, 15-2, and then Zaleski dos Santos, 24-7 at welterweight, fighting Rina Fakhradinov, 21. Fakhra, what? No. Fakhradinov. Victor Hugo Silva at bantamweight in the number 5 fight is 24-4. Oh, no, 24-4. Daniel Marcos is his opponent. Another undefeated 15-0 fighter there. And then fourth fight of the night, Victor Petrino, 9-0 at light heavyweight, fighting Modestus Bukauskas, who is 15-5. And a heck of a UFC journeywoman, Angela Hill. She's been hanging on a long time. She's always in entertaining fights, you know. Talk about robbery. Some people have suggested that some of her fights have been robberies because she did more work, but didn't get the nod. Her record is 15-13 on the good side of 500. This is a strawweight fight against a real tough girl, Denise Gomez, 8-2. So that'll be the third fight in. And then Eduarda Maura, 9-0, fighting Montserrat Ruiz, who's 10-3 at strawweight. Seen a little bit of there of Ruiz's fight. She's tough. It's probably not going to be a knockout at strawweight. See, that one goes to decision. And then lightweights. Kyle Fernandez, 8-1 at lightweight, fighting Mark Diakiese, 16-7 at lightweight. Kyle Fernandez. Yeah, I got a feeling. I'm due for a good UFC week. I was literally robbed of a $1,300 night the other night because of the San Antonio Spurs beating the Phoenix Suns in like the last 5 seconds of the game. Kevin Durant got fouled like to the point where he was bleeding. Like there's no saying no blood, no foul because he was bleeding. And the San Antonio Spurs had just scored a basket, so they were only down one. And there was, like, literally seconds on the clock. And fucking Durant got the inbound, and they stole the ball right out of his hands. They ripped it right out of his hands. No foul. He's sitting there shocked. They score the basket. Timeout. There's only, like, 1.2 seconds left for them to try to score to win. And, of course, they lose. A game they've been winning the entire thing, and that was like the last leg of my parlay that I needed to win. Thank God for the round robin, though. The round robin made it a $400 night for me because I did that option on that bet. It was like a 7-leg parlay, and I was like, oh, thank God. That salvaged me. It's a good little tool, too. If you think you're going to get one or two more.
I just looked up the name of that Russian that knocked out that was on the undercard, the second fight. Ars Radebeck, Makhmudov. That sounds familiar to anyone?
Makhmudinov or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Makhmudov.
Oh.
Yeah, the guy's big, huge. And the kind of, he's got an expression. His looks would be, you know, like if you hear something outside your bedroom window about 2 or 3 in the morning and you open the door, and that face is looking in. That's the stuff nightmares are made of. Check this guy out. And he's undefeated, and he hasn't really been tested much. I mean, he's 34, and he's talking about how he wants to fight Tyson. He said Tyson's been talking trash about him. I haven't heard that, but so
wow.
See how it goes.
You remember what Muhammad Ali said? Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you guys actually heard this real story. It's a true story. Same card, Carlos Takam taking on heavyweight boxer Martin Bacoli. He said he swallowed a wasp midway through his fourth round TKO win.
Oh,
yeah. He says, still coughing until now. And it just disturbed me in the ring, and I was surprised it's in my mouth. I was vomiting in my changing room. I kept vomiting for 1 minute. I think the wasp is still here. He said the wasp stung multiple times, pointing toward his ear and then his eyes when asked where it got him. Bacoli said, then said the wasp went into his mouth from there. The 30-year-old also noted during the interview that he could still feel the wasp inside him, pointing toward his neck when asked. That's strange. I can't believe that happened today.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before.
But it is what it
That's
is. He's actually from Scotland. He's from a Congolese fighter from Scotland. Sorry, he calls home. That's funny. A wasp. Of all the things that could happen here, I do remember one card here, up here in the Northeast in New England that I went to, I mean, in New Hampshire, at a place he used to go to for concerts. They had an MMA fight there in this outdoor venue. So they had a pavilion, and they had the cage under the pavilion, but it's still open air. So in one of the two co-main event fights, there was like a giant crane fly or something that landed on the guy's leg, and he swatted at it, and there was like a big spot of blood. And it was just weird. It was like, whoa. The bugs are bad out here because of the lights, you know. They were going for the lights, and it was the middle of summer. So that's crazy. It's the first time I ever see a bug interfere with a fight because, like, the crowd went nuts, and, like, the ref stopped the fight for a second, let him wipe it off. Just nutty. So anyway, yeah, a wasp. Never would think that would happen in a fight. And I don't know if you guys heard anything about the water situation out west. You're running out of water like crazy. You guys hear anything?
Not.
You know that. The Colorado.
I heard about it when I was living in Las Vegas. I was living on a boat in Lake Mead, and you could almost see the bathtub drain water.
Yeah,
and, they had to change one of the docks.
Yeah, it hasn't been in the news much very lately. I don't know whether there's been much rain out there or what, but they had to do a lot of cutbacks on the people that depend on, like, the Colorado River and the reservoirs like Lake Mead out there in Vegas, because, you know, there's just not enough water. So back in, early last year, they were talking about how low it was, or maybe the year before, to the point where they were finding bodies in Lake Mead.
Oh my God.
So it's bad out there. Even when I was out there, they were first constructing what they called the second straw to go into Lake Mead to feed Vegas. And, you know, the big thing with the Fertittas, who started the UFC, is they bankrupted the casinos because they were always talking about, you know, overdeveloping. They just wanted to put something into the next project, and they got too big. And even now, they're rebuilding some of their old casinos, putting new properties up. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, this second straw has sucked it down to this level now. Like, where are you going to get all the water for these projects? So apparently they have a top 100 residential water users list out here in the Las Vegas Water Valley Valley Water District. Las Vegas Valley Water District. It's tough to say six times fast. So the list has some interesting characters on it. Lorenzo Fertitta, who was the guy most connected to the UFC operation when the Fertittas ran it. Because Frank Fertitta III pretty much concentrated mainly on the business of the casinos. Lorenzo was more the point man for the UFC. He is in the third spot of the top 100 water users. Third spot. And there's also some other combat sports guys on here that might surprise you. Floyd Mayweather took number 37 on the list. And Dana White is not competing well with his old buddy because he's down at number 6, his buddy for Lorenzo at number 3. And, you know, there's a lot of other gambling names. Victoria Fertitta, another member of the Fertittas. She's the 57th member on the list. Another guy, Phil Ruffin, owner of Circus Circus and Treasure Island, is number 59. So they know there's no water, and they're just like losing hundreds and hundreds of gallons. I think actually Victoria was at like over 2 million gallons or something like that. I saw in another article, but yeah. Global warming, right? My dad would always say that when it was like super cold. Oh, global warming. So yeah, that's about it, I think. Anything else we got coming up? I'm forgetting.
Glory has a event. Heavyweight championship. Oh. Rico is going to defend his title Saturday. That's about all I can think of.
I used to watch that a lot. I don't know. It just hasn't been publicized enough lately. I think I used to get emails that I don't
know. I don't know if it'll... I doubt if it'll be on YouTube, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It'll be on. We'll find it.
Right.
I mean, we got the big Rocky run coming up next week. That counts for something, right?
Oh, did you ever get Harvey Dock on board with that? Has he got his costume all lined up? Have you been in contact with him?
You know what? It's funny. I'm Facebook friends with Harvey now. I didn't talk to him. I should reach out to him.
Yeah, because he was serious. Like, he was excited about that.
Yeah, I'll come out of the books for that.
Yeah. Just give him a heads up. Like, hey, if you still want to do that, man.
You know, back late summer, my left foot really started bothering me. Right off to the side of my foot, like on the outside, like shooting down. I thought maybe my shoes were getting beat, like, you know, my workout sneakers, something. And one day it was really, really bothering me. This made me figure. During the summer, especially that I work from home, some mornings I'd go to the gym and I'd either do the treadmill or the elliptical, and then I'd do like some jumping rope. I was jumping rope a lot. I was doing like, you know, 6-7 rounds a day sometimes. And so it bothered me a little bit. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to hold off on the jump rope for a little bit. Right in the beginning of September, I slipped and fell in the shower. And, you know, I land pretty much anything. So that day, I slipped, I fell, like, you know, people were like, oh my God, are you all right up there? And they got my foul mouth. I'm fucking fine. You know, goddamn son of a bitch. I was inventing first words that was going along. And my ankle started really bothering me. It didn't swell like I've had in the past, but I could feel it. And there were days that I would try to run, but I just couldn't do it. And I couldn't jump rope at all. So I was doing all low-impact work. And, you know, I would be out there, and I would try a little bit of running, and I couldn't do it. And I would still be able to walk, and I would do the elliptical, but the jumping rope, no running. And I'm like, you know, now we're in crunch time. It's coming up in 9 days. So what I was doing last week, and amazingly, this was inspired by the Phillies. Because, you know, I've been doing appearances, and, you know, when I go to games, I'm on my feet the whole time. And I'm like, what am I going to do? What am I going to have to do better than anything, right? Box. I said, well, if I'm going to, you know, at least get something in, it was the night of Game 7, you know, NLCS. I ended work at 4. I got 4 hours to kill. And I am, like, a wound up, you know, everything. And I said, I got to do something for the next 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Let me go downstairs and box. I'll do 20 rounds. That'll kill almost 2 hours. So I went down there and I taped up. I put the gloves on and I started boxing. Well, you figure I wasn't bouncing around a lot. I was just standing there planting my feet and punching. Ankle didn't bother me. Huh. Well, you know what's a good way to get in shape? Box your way into shape. That's what I started doing. Like, I started doing 15, 20 rounds a couple times a week. And the last 2 weeks, I said, you know what, Tone, you got to do some running at the gym. You have to. So I put, you know, the newer sneakers that I have on with a little bit more support. And as I always say, nuts and guts, right? So each day I'm trying to include a little bit more. So last week I was doing 15 minutes, then 18 minutes. Then the one day, of course, the treadmill malfunctions while I'm on it. Kind of set me back a couple days. Yeah. This week, I started off at 18 minutes. Today, I did 24 minutes. So, we'll see how it goes in 90s. Like, the last few days, I'd glove up. I'd put enough layers on that I look like the kid from Christmas Story. You know, I'd have 3 layers on. A lot of, like, 2 sweatsuits on, you know. And I would just, you know, I would stand there and I'd plant and I would just hit the bag and I would throw punches. And I'm like, if anything, at least I'm opening my lungs up.
Yeah.
And then tonight, you could figure, I went to the gym this morning, did a 2-mile run, like 2 miles. Came home, did a 2-mile loop at lunch, just walking, fast, brisk walking. I said, tonight, I got an idea. Tonight, I did 10 rounds of shadow boxing with 5-pound ankle weights on, a 20-pound weighted vest, and 3-pound hand weights.
Nice.
So I'm training myself now with additional weight on. And
talk to Mr. Shattuck about the Diamond DDP things.
I know. I was thinking about doing my DDP. Yeah. I told a friend of mine tonight, I asked if she was doing it, because I know she did it last year, and she's like, oh, I'm not sure, it's 9 days away, so I'm going to take that as a no.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, you know, I sprained my ankle and, you know, hurt my foot, and she said, you know, you better be careful. I said, listen, nuts and guts time, and mm-hmm. if I have to crawl, I will get over that line.
Yeah.
If I have to hop on 1 foot, the 3.1 miles, I will get over that line.
Okay.
You know, one thing I was saying, and I was talking about this the other day, when I was, you know, back, especially during my competitive years, I was probably the least athletic guy on the team. You know, I was not as strong as other. Well, I was strong, but there were guys that were just natural athletes. They were bigger, they were stronger, they were faster. You know, they were in better condition. I'm this short, heavy-set Italian kid just trying to do the best I can. And there was rarely a fight that I won because I was better. There were some. You know, there were some fights that I won just because I knew how to box a little bit better and I had, like, that, you know, arsenal of tricks. But most of the fights I won was because I was willing to stand there and go iron for iron and take everything you got and beat you on a war of attrition.
Right.
And that's what this is going to be to me. You know?
Yeah, I
think... Staying there.
I was kind of the same. I wasn't really, like, known for any sport. I wrestled a little bit in high school, and I tried to do it at Norwich, but then I fell off the roof. So I really wasn't in, like, peak form when I first started boxing. And it was just really a BMI. The 7-mile runs through the hills that changed my perspective on it and got me into the shape you know, to be to win those fights. I mean, because we were, I mean, we all had to face the academy guys. And those guys were forced to exercise every day.
Right.
Like, the Western teams don't get to deal with that kind of shit, you know. We had to beat the best of the best. They were always in the hunt. And,
you know, somebody made a great point the one time. When you fought the academy guys, you know, Air Force, Navy, Army, even you guys, VMI,
it's amazing I didn't have to
you
fight
guys them. Are representing.
Except the Citadel. I fought the Citadel
United
guy.
States.
Of all ironic things, I fight the fellow Southern military school guy while I'm in the Southern military school on behalf of the North. I beat a Citadel guy.
And you got a New England accent.
Yeah, at home, I beat him too. At the VMI facility. I wish I had that tape. Somebody.
You know, The one thing about, like, a lot of your academy guys, because they were representing the U.S. military, the greatest military in the world, these guys came in with the mentality of, we are superior to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there were times, especially fighting Air Force guys, like, they would come at you and they would literally try to break you. And it was always the second round I noticed. I fought a couple of Air Force guys, and I watched a couple of Air Force guys. And, like, the first round, it was almost like a feeling-out round. And then the second round, it would be like an avalanche. They'd be just coming at you, just throwing punches. And a lot of times, if you could weather that and you didn't fold, they would try to physically and mentally break you in that second round. And if they couldn't, the third round is where you could get them back. Like I said, I fought a couple of Air Force guys. Even the 6'7" guy, Slatton, you know, he got a
pilot
counts on me in the second round, and he was just throwing punches like you wouldn't believe. He was hitting me on angles with these 8-foot arms.
Oh, man.
But the third round, I started coming back. And I remember going back when it was over saying, I wish I had a fourth. Because I was finally getting inside. I was finally working through it. And it was over. But that was a big thing with the Navy. I fought a lot of Navy guys. And they would just try to always just overwhelm you and break you because they were taught, we are superior to you.
Yeah, Navy was in our region. So I had to fight the Navy in the regionals.
Yeah, you would know.
And then two of our other guys who were
Naval Academy 7 times.
Yeah. Well, my worst performance was at the Naval Academy against the guy I beat in regionals. I quit the fight.
Yeah. I'll tell you, man, I didn't get to fight Art Terry. Art Terry's a guy I would have loved to have fought because he and I would have matched up so perfectly because he was a strong physical guy.
Love to grow the body.
To fight inside.
Yeah, love to grow the body. He thought he had me won by going to the body. That's what was his failure because I was training on my hooks and I would throw uppercuts every now and then too, but very rarely.
Because I remember it was a guy on my team that he beat, and he basically beat him by fighting him inside and just beating him with body shots. The other guys that, like I said, and I know you fought him. I saw him fight 3 or 4 times, and I was like, that was a guy I would have loved to have had one fight with, because I think we would have been fight of the night, because it would have been toe-to-toe, iron for iron, you try to break me, and that would have been a fight where I think what would have won it for me was the fact that I was a little bit more versatile, or he was strong and physical and in your face,
which I could match. But the thing is, I knew the tricks. I knew how to, you know, roll off of a left hook and counter with a left hook. I knew how to block a body shot where I'd stick my elbow in your forearm. And I think that's what would have made a great fight, because we would have sat there, we would have went toe-to-toe, and who could break the other guy first?
Right. Yeah, I'd like a rematch with Michael Jordan. It's not going to happen, though. He's like, I'd need like a security clearance to even talk to him at this point. High up. I know. I tried to reach out to him, actually, on LinkedIn. I found
I remember you said you were going to do that.
Yeah, I did. And I never heard anything in response. He's probably still bitter about the way I fought him. You may remember. I was a little frustrated in that fight. I don't think I fouled or anything, but I was a little frustrated with the inside stuff going on. Couldn't really use my jab against him.
He's frustrated at you. What do you think? How do you think he feels about me?
Well, yeah. So he might not want to be on the show talking about that. He might not be able to, too. Like, he might be in one of those positions where it's literally
I'll tell you what was funny, Rick.
Not
was,
recommended you do any public.
A couple years ago. It's been about a good 10 or so years now. Shortly after I really started doing this a lot with you guys, I had put some of my old fights on YouTube. I only have about 3 or 4 of them that were in good VHS condition that I transferred over to electronic, and then I was able to upload them. And the Jordan fight was one of them. And I had a fight at Mansfield. It was their first ever card at Mansfield. And me and this guy from Penn State named Frank Stoltz, we tore into each other. I mean, we kicked the shit out of each other. And two funny things about this guy, Frank Stoltz, was I only remember him that year for Penn State, and I don't know if he even only boxed 1 year or if he transferred or whatever. I haven't seen him since. But about 20 years ago, we fought in 1996. About 20 years ago, around 2003, I'm at this local bar about 20 minutes from my house, suburbs of Philadelphia, and I have a boxing glove earring. And this girl there, she was one of the cocktail waitresses. She comes over, and we're talking. I had met her before. And her husband was kind of a drunk douche, right? And she goes, you have a boxing glove earring? I said, yeah. She goes, did you box? I said, I did. In fact, at the time, I still was. And she says, I have a friend of mine who used to box for Penn State. I said, really? She goes, what year? She goes, a couple of years ago, like 96, 97. I said, really? That's when I was at Lock Haven. I said, what's his name? She goes, Frank Stoltz. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, I almost spit my drink out on him. Do you know him? I said, no, I fought him. You fought Frank? I said, yeah, I fought him. I said, he and I were the fight of the night in Mansfield University. So a week or so later, her husband's back in there, and he's drunk and obnoxious. And we'll just say his name was Jim. Jim, oh, my God, this guy knows Frank. He fought Frank. Fucking asshole. Excuse me? Fuck that asshole, Frank. Fuck him. I said, why? No, I didn't know that. I mean, he might have been an asshole. I don't know. I only met him, like, that one time, and that was for 9 minutes of beating the shit out of each other. And this guy was like, oh, getting all mouthy. I'd love to see him right now. I'd smack him in his mouth. I said, I don't think you would. I said, trust me. I fought him, and he's tough as shit, and he'd whip your ass. What? I said, yeah. I said, trust me, I fought him. I said, buddy, I said, I got a 17-year-old kid I'm training right now that would probably drop you in 30 seconds. I said, yeah. And then, ironically, I bumped into them because they lived about 5 minutes from me. And I bumped into them at Walmart. He had no recollection of ever saying that to me.
Wow.
So wait. In fact, he was so drunk. He's standing there. His wife was a cocktail waitress. She's in, like a short skirt. I watched a guy take his phone and take a picture of her dress 5 feet from him, and he didn't notice.
Oh, my God.
So then a couple of years later, I'm doing the show with you. So probably around maybe 2010, 2011-ish. I put those fights on YouTube, and you posted one of them on the page.
Right.
Hey, And next thing I know, there's a comment on there. Hey, man, do you have any more of my fights? And you sent it to me. You're like, dude, Tony, this guy, whatever. And I'm like, oh, fuck, that's Frank. I'm like, I was hoping he wasn't asking for a rematch because that first one was tough enough as it was. I hit this guy with punches. You know, it was funny how the fight worked out. But when we go out there in the first round, he's a little taller than me. And, you know, we're going out there, we're boxing. And he goes to throw a right hand, and I do the Philly shoulder, the Philly shell. And I roll off it, and I counter with a right hand, left hook, like, boom, boom. And his body, like shudders, and he buckles into the ropes. And the referee calls an 8 count. So he gives him the 8 count. And then we start fighting first round, and we're, you know, throwing whatever. And we get in a clinch, and the referee breaks us from the clinch, and he waves us to fight. I see him cock his right hand. And as he throws this long, like, 7 seconds to get their right hand, I slip, and I counter with a left hook. And as I hit him, he goes down. But it was a knockdown. It was definitely a flash knockdown. He was off balance. It was a good punch, but I think my second left hook, which just missed him, he goes down. By the time I'm at the neutral corner, he's back up. So now we end the first round. We go to the second round. Now, I'm fine. In my mind, I got a home for this left hook. So now what he starts doing is he would feint the jab, throw a right hand, and he would step straight back. So now my mind is counter with the left hook. I miss 6 consecutive counter left hooks by about 3 feet each. And I'm looking, I'm swinging for the fences, and I'm missing bad. I then counter his counter, and when he would go to throw that feint before he would throw the right hand, I would just stick a telephone George Foreman jab right in his face. Pow! And his whole body shudder back, and he would miss the right hand. He would go to do it again, and I would step in. Pow! And then the second round ends. We go to the third round, and we're pretty close on the cards. I'm probably still ahead because of my big first round. He walks me into a right hand. Kaboom. And I go to clinch him, and my legs are jelly, right? And the referee calls an 8 count. And the referee's counting, and I'm looking at him. And I'm looking at the referee, and I'm like, I'm trying to remember what the hell I'm doing. And I'm like, all right, I'm getting counted on. Where am I again? Shit. And then the referee goes, where are you?
In the middle of the desert.
It's not like it was an hour. I'm looking at him, I'm like, and I'm thinking, where the hell am I? Shit. And I'm looking at him, and then all of a sudden the light bulb goes on. I'm in Mansfield. I scream in his face, I'm in fucking Mansfield. He goes, okay, now I'm ready for the walk to me. And I perfected my drunk walk, getting back in the dorms after a night out. He goes, step to the side. I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to topple over. I hop. And in the few seconds that went on, I cleared up. Boom. And then next thing you know, that last 30 seconds of that fight was just two guys swinging for the fences. I mean, the ovation started with 30 seconds to go. And the fact that I already got my hand raised on that is a happy memory. But when he emailed me and said, hey, you got any more of my fights? I'm like, oh, thank God he ain't asking for a rematch.
Yeah, those were the days. I need to start going on my 7-mile runs again. Getting too much main weight on me. Oh.
Yeah.
But getting some hard work and did some big tree jobs. Risked my life several times. Did some work off lifts, which is sometimes very uncomfortable. And slung some wood. Did some wood splitting lately. So I'm going right back to that neighborhood. It's one of those things like, you know, you get good word of mouth in one community, and it happens to be a very wealthy community. You know, could make you a ton of money in one block. And it's, so like our reputation is already spreading up the street. Over the last 2 years, I've done on one side of the street every single house, 7 or 8 houses. I've done something for each one of them. Not all big money work, but I've done something for each one of them. And now they're all asking for more stuff before winter. So that'll keep me in a little bit of shape. But, yeah, nothing is better than a 2-3 mile run at least once a day. But we used to do the 7 mile run every Tuesday. And there were some decent hills involved, you know. Virginia is not all flat. So, yeah, that got me in shape for the regionals. And I got some real good hillage right next door to me, so I have no excuse. Sometimes, I mean, for all the dad weight bod, you know, dad bod guys out there that have gotten the beer bellies and just eating too much fast food on the go, like me. I've gotten weight off before, and the hardest part is getting the routine going in the beginning. So what a lot of times I would have to do is like walk up the hill and then run down the whole hill to just like get the idea back in your head, oh shit, this is running and it's easy. You know, that's not the hard uphill shit that makes you want to pass out the first time you try it. Like, it's all easy, but you're still getting that leg motion going that gets the endorphins that kind of reward you for working out. So I guess I need to start there. Start walking up the hill and running down it. But anyway, I don't know if I'm going to be asking for any rematches anytime soon. I do still want to rematch the guy I wrestled in high school. I was thinking about that today, ironically. But yeah, not yet. Give me 6 months. I still need 6 months of training. I think that's about the timeline anyway, because it just happened a few months ago, the alumni thing. And we went back and forth about it. We kind of ended on a truce. But he was wisecracking. Like, you want to go 0-2? like, oh, really? All right. We'll find out. So, yeah, there's like a Facebook community for that wrestling group. And if they do another one next year, I'm definitely going to show up. In shape. I don't know who they'll give me to wrestle, but not him. But yeah, that was an arch rival school situation from high school. I wasn't a great wrestler at that point. I was just kind of just starting on the varsity, and I got up against him. He was pretty well known. Nobody expected me to be that close. And then came down to like one set of back points that I didn't get. But it came down to the last whistle, so that would be a good one to run back, because it was close the first time. And I think he's got a bad knee, so I'm going to go for the single leg. Or the head throw, I don't know. I used to be good at the fireman's, too. Fireman's carry takedown. But anyway. Until next week, guys, thanks for stopping by, and we'll have more fights to talk about, hopefully some gambling winnings. Goes live here tomorrow morning. We'll be legal in Maine.
I'll keep you guys up to date with my updated training.
Yeah, stay at it, bud. Let's enjoy the fights this weekend.
All right. See you guys.
Good night.